I'm Matt Katz. You're listening to The Takeaway. Over the last several weeks, we've been checking in with communities across continents about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting life. We now go to India, where the number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 has remained relatively low for its population, which is among the largest in the world. For the first few weeks of the pandemic, the Indian government took steps to close down the border and restrict movement in the country. Starting last week, the state ordered a nationwide lockdown, leading its economy to spiral downward. Locking down a country with one of the world's largest populations is a giant logistical problem, and many people throughout the country are suffering as a result. For more on this, I'm joined by Karen Singh, a reporter for the New York Times based in New Delhi, and Sanjeev Maglani, the Reuters bureau chief in New Delhi. Welcome to you both.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Karen, how is the lockdown of such a large population being enforced? Are people following the orders to stay home?
Well, when you say a lockdown in India, that means 1.3 billion people who've been asked to stay at home.
It's a mind-boggling number.
Yeah, it's nearly a fifth of humanity, and we've seen it play out in various ways. The lockdown might help curb the spread of the virus, but it has brought life and the country's economy to a grinding halt. So that's put millions of Indians out of work and left families hungry.
Are people actually then staying in their homes? They're not working. There's hunger, and so what are they doing? What do the streets look like?
When you ask such a large population to stay at home, we have to understand that not all of them are able to stay at home because of the kind of jobs they do. India has 470 million workers who work in the informal sector, and that means these are vegetable vendors. These are people who run carts with, you know, all kinds of things. These are stone cutters, people who work as maids in people's houses. They typically earn their livelihood by going out of their homes, and they live in places that are densely populated. These are crowded slums where people live 10 to a room a lot of times, and social distancing is not just difficult, it's nearly impossible in these places.
Sanjeev, until recently, Prime Minister Narendra Modi had resisted a national lockdown. So what changed?
Yeah, I think then they saw the reality. I mean, like many other countries, India was also slow to react at the beginning, and they looked at it and said it's a China problem. And I think we were slow, but then they moved very decisively when the numbers started to stare them in the face. I mean, like Karan mentioned, this is a country of 1.3 million people. The health systems are nowhere near the standards that are there in several countries in the West. As it is, India has a very low percentage of doctors. We've got something like one doctor for about, I think, 2,000 people, as opposed to the World Bank thing for about one per thousand. And there are parts of India that are even, it's worse. So this is, If it blows up in the way it has blown up in other countries, it would clearly overwhelm the structure here. And so I think we are at this stage where they're trying to sort of stem it, keep it off for the next 3 weeks. I mean, this is the world's largest lockdown, and then hoping that it'll sort of blow over. They'll be able to get some systems going in the hospitals. I mean, they're starting to prepare stadiums and train railway coaches to sort of house people. I mean, that's where they are. This is going to, we don't know what it's going to look like on April 15 when this lifts.
Yeah.
But that's the hope is that, the hope is that they might have sort of reduced the numbers by doing this kind of lockdown that has been quite painful, as Karan mentioned, for a lot of people.
Karen, an unintended effect of the lockdown was that it triggered thousands of laborers to migrate back to their home villages. And I've seen images of this migration. Apparently, the government only gave about a four-hour warning before the lockdown. How did that work? How did everyone get home?
Well, these people are walking. They're walking for several hundred kilometers on foot. They're carrying their children on their bags. They're carrying their luggage, their food with them. And it's we've already seen at least 22 migrants who died while trying to attempt this journey back home. And I think it's important to understand why people are feeling so helpless. It's because they're attempting these journeys, risking their lives at the time of a global pandemic, because what they fear more is starving, not coronavirus.
So why couldn't they stay wherever they had stayed in the cities? Why did they have to try this long journey back home?
They've been furloughed from their jobs. They've basically been told by their employers that this is it. We don't know when we can call you back for your jobs, and you're not going to be paid. They've been told by the people who take rent from them for these tiny apartments, tenements, really, that they live in, you should go. We will not be able to give you the house for any longer because you can't pay. These are people who live paycheck to paycheck. And when we say, you know, these are informal workers who work in the sector that accounts for nearly 80% of the country's exports. So you're talking things like IKEA carpets that are made, you know, in India, things made from leather, all kinds of things. These are the people making them. India's economy runs on these people.
Is the government doing anything to address these issues involving the migrants in terms of their lack of food and their problems with the travel, Karen? Is there anything going to change in that regard?
Yes. So till now, we've seen a very unexpected response from the government. There are some states where these migrants, initially, when they were trying to enter, they were being beaten up by the police. They were being told to go back. But there were some states who later decided to run buses for them. But that's a tiny percentage of people who will be accommodated in these buses. That's like about 100 buses in one of India's largest states. But there are people going from one corner of the country literally to the other. And it's not going to be enough because these people have no money on them. They have no food. Some have died of sheer exhaustion because of the kind of journey that they have decided to take on.
Wow. Sanjeev, tell us about the local response to the coronavirus in Kashmir. Are people there in lockdown as well?
People are locked down there as well. But Kashmir has an even more acute problem. They've been locked down for a long while. They've been locked down since August, when the government in Delhi decided to change the status, you know, withdraw its autonomy, and they wanted to tighten the grip of the territory, which is, as you know, has been racked by a revolt running for 3 decades. So they wanted to quell it down. So they imposed controls. So the internet was stopped there in the beginning. People were detained. That has since been brought up again. But, you know, the speeds are way behind. They're like on 2G. So while the rest of India is under a lockout, for sure, we are all under a lockout and we can't step out, but we at least got the net going. I can talk, I can download stuff, I can work, but Kashmir is an almost like a digital black hole. I mean, I don't even know how much they know about how serious the coronavirus is, what kind of rumors are going on, because of the sheer controls on the net there. The government doesn't want the net going fully because they fear that, you know, this can be used. It's been used in the past, they say, to sort of drum up protests, and then people, you know, spill out into the streets, and then it gets violent and the whole cycle begins. So that has always been a problem. So it's pretty frustrating for them.
Are the health officials in Kashmir feeling prepared, Sanjeev?
The health officials are also, I was speaking to a colleague of mine, the health officials are also struggling. They would like to do e-consulting the way people are trying to do other places. You know, if you don't have to come to the hospital for people, you know, and trying to tell them the difference between what's a common cold, what's corona. They would like to do that even for people down in the villages, sort of bring them up to speed. And, you know, simple things like even washing your hands and how do you do that. But they can't do that with this kind of speeds. I mean, the net is clearly restricting. The doctors have been complaining about this, you are creating a problem that you'll... Because we can't reach out to these people, they are going to try and come to the hospitals, and then, you know, that begins another cycle.
Karen, we know about the devastating effects that the virus has had on the economy in the U.S., and India already struggled with something of a weak economy. So how is the lockdown expected to impact India economically?
You know, just before the lockdown happened, India's economy was already weak and fragile. You know, some of the poorest people in India had gone back to one or two meals a day. People were not buying things like underwear, biscuits worth about 5 cents, even cars. They just didn't have enough jobs. So most Indians were tightening their wallets. With coronavirus, economists say that things have become much worse, that they've fallen off a cliff nearly. And this is because workers in the informal sector that the country's economy runs on have nowhere to go. There's no future for them, because if they're not able to make a living, if the factories are shut, if they're not able to be on the streets doing their jobs, they have no way to earn. So no one will be able to spend, because India's economy is basically, you know, it's been downgraded several times in the last week by rating agencies. India's economic growth has been projected as low as, you know, 3% by some economists.
Extraordinary times. Karen Singh is a staff writer for The New York Times, and Sanjeev Miglani is the Reuters bureau chief in New Delhi. Thank you to you both for your reporting and for sharing the news over there with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.